They say to be officially spring, robins must do more than just sing. They must endure snowfall times three. That's too much to ask, seems to me. And given the weather today, Thursday, I will add something that doesn't rhyme. This is ridiculous. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody, where the arts, music, and culture of West Wisconsin has its voice. This week, if you're old enough, the name Grace Kelly will conjure up a mental image of a movie star turned Monaco Monarch. But there's a younger version, and she plays the alto saxophone. She's one of the headliners in this year's Eau Claire Jazz Festival, and you'll meet her right here. Tori Dobrin is artistic director for the very unique and popular all-male comedy dance troupe Les Ballets Trocadero de Monte Carlo. They're heading west from New York to add some unique seasoning next Tuesday evening to the Pablo Center's first memorable season. Jim Oliver and Wayne Merrick take a tandem look at Mr. Popper's Penguins, playing later this month at the Eau Claire Children's Theater's Oxford Theater. And they'll preview remaining productions in the current season. Mr. Oliver also looks at other West Wisconsin stages and tells us what he sees. And what do you say we begin with a bit of music? Here it is. Music from Hiroya... Well, we'll get to that in a minute. The first thing I did was get a lesson on pronunciation.
Tsukamoto.
Tsukamoto.
Tsukamoto, yes.
With a T, Tsukamoto.
Yes, that's right.
Hiroya Tsukamoto. With that out of the way, I was able to get on with getting to know the man. I've been in contact with Hiroya via email for over a year as he crisscrosses the country. He's always been in touch when approaching Wisconsin, and finally he and I are able to connect prior to some shows near where we live. He's a guitar player from Japan. He works at his craft to a point of presenting very innovative performances, solo work, looping parts electronically for an ensemble sound, and he sings. When it comes to the guitar, he does and has done just about all of it. He spoke with me via phone on the road in Michigan. You like to travel. You make your living playing music. Since you tour a lot, or you seem to tour a lot, is there kind of a method to your touring? How often do you like to be out? How many days a year? What do you have going?
Year, I usually do like 120 shows a year. So basically every week I play in different places.
You picked up the banjo first at the age of 13, then a year later you picked up the guitar. I'm kind of interested in what you were imagining for yourself before music took over.
So I wanted to become a soccer player, so I was pretty serious. So I went to high school to do a soccer, basically, which was a very strong team. And I started playing guitars too. The soccer was very, very competitive, so I kind of gave up with that, and then I shifted to music. Pretty much playing music was the only thing I did, basically.
So then after you picked up the guitar, you played in the kind of bands that many teenagers play in.
Right. I listened to lots of American rock.
You actually kind of took off on your own, but when you came to America, you were in Boston, and you had a band first, and now you do a lot of solo stuff.
Yes.
Do you still like to do both? Do you still collaborate with other people?
Sometimes, yeah, once in a while. And of course, it's always fun to play with people, but I also like doing solo because it's very challenging, but I can do whatever I want. Yeah, I'd like to do both if possible. But traveling is much easier with a solo and cheaper, too.
Oh, yes. How do you travel? Do you drive all over?
Depending on the places. So this time I flew to Detroit, and I got a car from Detroit last week, and I'm doing six shows in Michigan, Indiana, Ohio. And today is my last day. I'll be playing at the Michigan State University tonight.
And then you're coming to Wisconsin.
Yes, I'm going back home, and I'll be playing some shows in East Coast, Maryland, Pennsylvania this week.
Okay, so where is your home?
New York City.
You know, I understand that New York sort of had an effect on you. I mean, you were playing in Boston, you were living there, but I've always heard it does something to people. What did it do to you?
I graduated from music college in Boston to become a jazz guitarist. Lots of my friends also moved to New York City, and I kind of followed that wave. And also, I really liked the music. I was really into music, contemporary jazz music in New York City. And I used to go to those clubs almost every day when I moved there. And I think that influenced me, especially in my early days in New York. Yes.
All right. You are what we like to call restless. You have you've done a lot of things. You love the Americas, South and North. You were moved by South American music at one time.
Yes. So when I was in middle school, I went to Mexico with my brother, and we homestayed like whole summertime.
Oh.
The family I was staying had two boys, but they played the guitar so well, and that was my start. And also they showed me some South American music. And so I wanted to learn Spanish, so I went to the college, a university in Japan, and majoring Spanish.
I want to hear you say something in Spanish.
No, I have to practice more. I forgot many words.
I'd be curious as to what a Japanese accent speaking Spanish sounded like.
Actually, Japanese accent and Spanish accents are very similar. So to me, it's very easy to access. So English is very hard.
All right.
Yes.
I guess that makes sense. We're on the telephone with Hiroya Tsukamoto. He's a guitarist, and he is returning to Western Wisconsin. He's playing in Viroqua at the Driftless Bookstore, and then Saturday, April 20th, at the Big River Theater. That's in Alma, along the beautiful Mississippi River. So, Hiroya, we have established the kinds of things that happened to you as a young man. When did you discover that you wanted more? And the wanted more quote has to do with more and more composing. I watched a lot of interviews with you and a lot of your live performances over the weekend in which you were talking to the audience. You used the word writing a lot when you discovered some of those alternative tunings like Dadgad.
Yes.
So when you write music for yourself as a guitarist, do you actually write it down? And if so, is it just chord progressions? Is it actual notes? How do you write for yourself?
It's both. I do both. Because when I had a group, I had to write all the parts or the different instruments. But now I do a solo, which is much more simple.
You also like to sing sometimes.
Yeah, I sing.
You kind of hum along with your guitar playing. That's cool.
Yes, thank you.
So you are constantly learning new things?
Yes, I try to practice as much as I can. Yeah, like meeting lots of different performers from different places, and they inspire me to, you know, do more and showing new things I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Great, yeah.
In a lot of the videos that I saw, I heard you talk a lot about direction and directions that you want to go. Give me an idea of a direction that Hiroya wants to go.
In the future?
Yes.
As a guitarist, I just, want to be good. I want to be the level. I don't have to think about anything when I play. So I want to play naturally instead of thinking about, something else. Yeah, just keep playing. And to me, like, playing shows is a practice. So I have a simple desire that I want to be good every time I play.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that kind of thing makes me, play more shows.
Well, I haven't seen you play, but I have heard that you are good every time you play.
Thank you.
You talked about growing as a composer and as an instrumentalist, kind of at different times of your development. Are you one of those more than the other right now? Are you more composer than instrumentalist, or are you more instrumentalist than composer, or are you balancing them out?
The last one, balancing up. I'm a mixture of everything. Back then, when I moved to New York City, I was more like instrumentalist, guitarist, sideman. But I kind of quit doing the sideman gigs. I try to focus on being a solo gig. About 7 years ago. Since then, I mix up everything. Besides playing music, I also tell lots of stories behind the music, too, at the show.
Well, that sounds interesting. You mentioned what happened to you after you moved to New York and that you were busy going around to different clubs. And that's what New York does to people. You cannot help but to meet people. And you meet people that have the same dreams as you do, kind of like in Nashville, a little further to the northeast. Is that something that you're looking forward to doing more, playing with more soloists, teaming up in duets and trios and that kind of thing?
Yeah, with the group too. But I will keep putting up, keep playing as a solo too.
Sure. I think you should. So where can people, you got a website, yes?
Yes, as long as they can spell my name, right?
I'll let them know how to do that.
Yeah, and I have some social media, Facebook, Instagram, that kind of stuff too.
Okay. Well, you have fun. Travel safely. It's been wonderful talking with you. I love your music. I'm looking forward to possibly seeing you.
Oh, that'd be great.
I don't have to ask you to keep in touch because I know you will. You're good at that.
Okay, yeah.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Al.
Gotta see that guy. Okay, here comes the website and the spelling. Hiroya. H-I-R-O-Y-A. Skamoto. It's not like it sounds. T-S-U-K-A-M-O-T-O. Get it? .com. Okay. What do you say we check what's on stage in Western Wisconsin? Mr. Jim Oliver, on duty.
Thank you, sir. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Disney's Aladdin Friday and Saturday in the Oxford Theater. Raggedy Ann and Andy will be presented by the Barron Spotlighters Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in the Barron Area Community Center. Albert Einstein and Pablo Picasso meet in a bar as the basis of the current production of the University of Wisconsin Stout Theater. Picasso at the Lapin Agile is a comedy by comedian, actor, musician, etc. Steve Martin. The show will be presented through Saturday in the Harvey Hall Theater at the University. The St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson is presenting Honky Tonk Laundry Fridays and Saturdays through May 18th. And the St. Croix Art Barn in Osceola has announced auditions for the 2019 season for 5 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in the Art Barn. The season, which runs from June through October, includes A Midsummer Night's Dream, The Little Mermaid, Ole and Lena's Wedding, Blythe Spirit, and the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Always. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio, where support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory, presenting Signs of Spring, featuring paintings by Paul Oman, clay sculpture by Patty Fox, and jewelry by Edna Early. More at artzgallery.com. Over the years, the Eau Claire Children's Theater probably has the distinction of being our most frequent guest. They play a big role in the artistic fabric of where we live. He's back. Time for Jim Oliver to reveal their latest endeavor.
Mr. Popper's Penguins is a play based on the 1938 book by Richard and Florence Atwater. The show will be presented by the Eau Claire Children's Theater Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 26th, the 27th, and the 28th in the Oxford Theater. Here to talk about the play is Wayne Merrick, founder, executive director of the Children's Theater, and director of the show. The 2011 film featured Jim Carrey, Angela Lansbury, and Madeline Carroll. And now the play has been out since, I don't know.
It's been out for a while.
Been out for a while anyway. Why don't you tell us about
right?
the play?
It is an extremely familiar, popular title. We were doing a number of school matinees for the show. Just really an overwhelming response from the schools. It's been on our surveys each year for a number of years and just never quite made it onto the season, but obviously did this year. And, we ended up adding four more school matinees than we were going to do. Mm-hmm. They've all sold out. Just a really popular title, and we're still getting this late in the game calls from schools looking to see if there are still seats available. So it's never been out of print, just a really familiar title. Probably the movie helped a little resurgence in the popularity of the title, mm-hmm. although obviously the movie, you know, takes more liberties and, you know, things you can do in a movie that you can't mm-hmm. do on stage. But the stage version is much more true to the book and the time period. And it's the, you know, Minneapolis Children's Theater Plays for Young Audiences version of the script. So it is a musical. There are a number of musical numbers in the show, some really lovely ballads and some show numbers for the Penguins, things like that. So just a really popular book, popular title.
How large is the cast?
38 people, so about 15 Penguins and the rest play humans. Large cast. All the cast members are 18 and under, so... Mm-hmm. It's a really great way to showcase, you know, really all ages. But, you know, some of the younger kids are the Penguins, of course. Penguins are short. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the older teens then are the leads in the show.
Mm-hmm. Red, you know, was going back looking up the place. I've never heard of it, frankly.
Sure.
So I was trying to find out something about it. And evidently some of the productions, they just use puppets.
I've seen productions like that where they maybe cut down on the number of penguins or... Mm-hmm. There's, you know, two or three puppeteers that can do two puppets each or a puppet each, you know, depending on how they do it. Maybe one can move or whatever, and then the rest are on, you know, basically puppets on sticks. So you can get more penguins out there with, you know, fewer puppeteers. Mm-hmm. So that is certainly one way to approach it. These are actually performers because the penguins actually have to tap dance.
Oh.
They actually have to dance.
Oh.
So these are actual, you know, human penguins. So
oh, well, Wikipedia description of the book says it's set in Stillwater, Minnesota.
Sure.
Then the movie appears to be set in New York.
The play doesn't necessarily say that it's set anywhere, but the opening song of the show is called Stillwater. Mm-hmm. And the song is really about, you know, being in a nice town. It really sets up the time period where, you know, everybody you know is your neighbor and mm-hmm. everybody you went to high school with still lives there, you know, and like, you know, it really just sets up the small town feel or whatever. So it would not surprise me if it was Stillwater, Minnesota, although there is no reference in the script to it being in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Just it's in Stillwater.
We are talking to Wayne Merrick, who is director of the Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Mr. Popper's Penguins. How long does the show run? Is it a long play?
Because it is for school matinees and then, of course, for the public, those shows typically don't have an intermission. This one probably runs about 70, maybe 75 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So that's a good length for both schools and the public. Long enough for the attention span or whatever of young people, but no intermission.
I guess the question I would have is that it's apparently designed to appeal to children. Would adults have?
I think with the book having not been out of print, plus the response from the schools, I mean, there's just a lot of people that probably are familiar with the book. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just the title's kind of fun to say, but yeah. You know, they've either read it as a child or it was read to them. So I feel like even the parents probably are very familiar with the book mm-hmm. at some point in their past. Mm-hmm. So it's just an enjoyable show. There's some really nice messages about family and things that are important. Like I said, for a smaller children's musical, some really solid music, a couple of really nice ballads, some fun up-tempo numbers too, mm-hmm. But really some nice messages and... You know, just a nice family show.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the music.
Yeah, with a show like this, they're written to be done with tracks. So part of the package is the scripts and then the musical scores and then a professional recording of the music. They're not just electronically recorded. It's tracks of an actual orchestra, so they sound better. It sounds real. It's not canned.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the number in the cast, a lot of kids getting mm-hmm. some experience on stage. Talk a little bit about your theater classes. I noticed in your most recent newsletter that you're pretty well full.
Yep, since 1994, I think, was the first summer of classes. And yeah, we're just about full on most of the summer classes and a few spots left. So I would encourage anybody who is interested to check it out sooner than later before they're all full.
What I like to do always is to see how your memory is and have you recite the rest of the season.
Oh, yes. Well, we're always busy. Even though Mr. Penguin, Popper's Penguins, opens at the end of April, we are in rehearsals for the 2014 Tony Award-winning Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, May 16th through the 19th. And then right after Penguins, that same weekend, we have auditions for our June musical, which is Midlife, the Crisis musical. So usually the June spot's maybe more of an adult musical. And then the big summer show and auditions for that are at the end of May would be Peter Pan. So that'll be a large cast of kids and adults again. Mm-hmm. And that'll go up at the Pablo Center the end of July.
Have you started looking at next year? Have you figured out when the break is between this season and next season?
The break between seasons has gotten shorter and shorter, but typically the season ends at the end of July with a big musical, so Peter Pan this year. And the quote-unquote next season starts usually in September. Dancing with the Eau Claire Stars is kind of the kickoff to the season. We are really just in those last moments of setting the season, getting rights, getting contracts, checking on availability, and usually our brochure for the next season goes out in July, ready for the next fall.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to have you talk philosophically for a minute here about my personal experience in theater is very important to me and has always been, and I got started at the Christmas program of District 5 in Wise County, Minnesota. I think when I was in eighth grade, I think I was in six different one-act plays.
Sure.
And it was just a wonderful experience. You've got a whole raft of kids in a show here. What do you hope to have them go away with?
It's really the process. It's not really the theater part of it. Mm-hmm. Yes, we'd love for them to continue on when they're in high school, college, when they move somewhere and they get involved with their community theater. But I don't think that's really the most important part of it. It's all the other stuff that they're getting. And I think that's really what the parents respond back to us with. Great job. The show was great. They enjoyed watching the performance, but what they more often tell us is what the kids are picking up while they're going through the process, the responsibility that they have to take for being there on time and knowing what they're doing, time management. They got to get their homework done before they can get to rehearsal, and teamwork and respect and following directions. I really think it has more to do with the life skills that they're gaining by going through this, the public speaking skills. I hear that frequently from parents. They're just amazed how much it brings their child out of their shell, how much better they do in an English class where they have to do speeches. They are more fearless. They can get up in front of their class and talk. So it's really, really that's the important part. Yes, we would love them to sing well, dance well, know their lines and, have a good production. But I think for the young people, it's really the other skills that are more important that they're taking away from the experience.
Amen. Well, we've been talking to Wayne Merrick, who is director of the Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Mr. Popper's Penguins. The show runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 26th, the 27th, and the 28th in the Oxford Theater. Curtain times are 7:30 p.m. Friday, 11 a.m., and 1:30 p.m. Saturday, and 1:30 p.m. Sunday. For ticket information, call 715-839-8877 or online at www.ecct.org. Wayne Merrick, thanks so much for coming back to talk to us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is April 11th, but given the weather outside, little sleigh ride. It seems kind of apropos. Lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you are the lyrics. Why not? Thank you, Jim Oliver. Wonderful conversation. Coming up, Grace Kelly, Eau Claire Jazz Fest headliner on Spectrum West. Again, touching on the weather outside, there have been lots of cancellations, so maybe our Spectrum memos may not apply. People may, during the course of the day, decide to postpone events, but we'll tell you about them anyway. UW River Falls Dance Theater presents the annual spring concerts through Saturday, 7:30 p.m., Davis Theater, Kleinpel Fine Arts Building. Tickets at the University Theater box office at the door and online marketplace.uwrf.org. Let's see, this evening also is the artist reception for Arts West 40 at the L.E. Phillips Library in Eau Claire, 7 to 8:30 p.m. Awards will be presented at 7:30. The exhibit is up through May 28th. And again, they may decide to postpone, so I suggest you check websites feverishly today if you plan on going somewhere. You know, if you like ballet and you'd like to see another side of ballet, then you simply must see New York's Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo. The side they bring is one with a smile and a laugh. In addition to the oohs, ahs, bravos, and bravas, this troupe features men, accomplished dancers dressed as lady ballerinas, doing all the moves that make ballet so spectacular. Along with periodic moves and expressions designed for one purpose only, levity. They'll be at Eau Claire's Pablo Center next Tuesday, the 16th. Words do not do them justice, but we're going to use them anyway in a conversation I had the other day with the Troc's artistic director, Tori Dobrin. Well, I should warn people to set aside some time if they decide to start watching online videos of you guys, because they won't be able to tear themselves away. It sure has been fun. Prepping for this interview has been as enjoyable as any I've ever had.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah. People should know these are not ballerinas.
No, actually, we are ballerinas. Do you know what ballerina means, in fact?
I guess I don't.
The principal dancers of ballet companies. So core members are not ballerinas. Soloists are not ballerinas. It's only the principal dancers. And the prima ballerina is the main star of the company.
Okay.
So ballerina in itself doesn't have any gender.
Oh, it doesn't?
So, no, no. So we could be, in fact, ballerina.
Here I
am. But you would have to say male ballerina.
You know, and I did go online to find out what a male ballet dancer is called. Now I find out it's male ballerina. Back to watching the videos and some interviews I watched. You get dancers who are doing this as a final act in their dance career, or you get young men fresh out of school. That seems to be, to me, a very workable arrangement. You get always fresh air, yet always experience to mentor people. Now, being a Troc, I read, has become a goal for many male dancers. True? And do you have a waiting list?
When I joined the company in 1980 as a dancer, it was definitely an older crowd. Let's say in the late 20s, I was 26, but the bulk of the people were over 30, and they had already finished up with their careers, and they just wanted to have some fun or whatever. And at some point, I guess about, I don't know, maybe less than 10 years ago, it suddenly became a career choice. And we started getting young guys right out of the school who had never had any professional experience before at all. So I think that has a lot to do with society, a lot to do with young gay guys who are, you know, growing up. Suddenly it became super acceptable, where in my day it was super unacceptable in the dance world. So now we do have a really good mix. The senior ballerina is Robert Carter, and he's in his mid-40s. Hmm. And 2 years ago, our even more senior ballerina was Paul Gieselin. I think he was 52 when he left.
Wow.
And then we have some younger ones who are, you know, 19, 20. Yeah. So we do really have a really good span of ages.
Let's define your role. We all pretend to know what all these titles are. Artistic director, choreographer, same thing as it pertains to you? Mm-hmm.
No. The artistic director basically sets the tone of what the company is doing, you know, the dance company is doing.
Okay.
That's the main function of the artistic director. What does that mean? Choosing the repertory, choosing the dancers, coaching the dancers to express themselves in a way that the artistic director sees is beneficial to the company or his or her vision.
Okay.
In terms of Ballet Trocadero, because we're such a small management company, we all have to do everything. I'm doing everything along with Isabel Martinez, the associate director, and Liz Harler, who is the general manager, and also Shelby Sonneberg from Wisconsin, who's the associate production manager. So we all do everything. That means looking for the bus. That means booking the bus, you know, organizing flights and stuff like that.
Okay. I kind of made a note that said CCO, Chief Creative Officer. That kind of, I guess that.
That's good. I like that. Yeah.
That would fit.
Good.
Tori Dobrin, he is Artistic Director of Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo, coming to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the beautiful new Pablo Center at the Confluence, April 16th. That's a Tuesday evening performance. let's define it. All-male drag ballet corps parodies the conventions and cliches of romantic and classical ballet. So now, I need to point out, though, that this is not all funny stuff. It's tastefully done. It's saturated with marvelous and professional ballet moves like the chasse, the écarté, the pirouette with a fouetté, even some fondue. See, and I didn't even realize that was something other than dipping food into oil. I learned so much. Tori, some comments I read include the perfect blend of art and humor. You really must love the ballet to dance it with this much gusto and fun. So you already told me that you do have a dance background, although I see that the troupe does have a ballet master, Mr. Mora, and you have coaches. Your roster even includes an orthopedic medical consultant. Good for you.
Yes.
You know, I can imagine how the ballet training continues. Tell me how the comedy steps and the moments are inserted.
Well, that's an interesting way that we try to balance the technical aspect and the comedy aspect of it. So if we're working on a new ballet, for instance, let's start there, then what we do is that we try to understand that the style and the technique is as pure as possible. So in other words, we might have someone from St. Petersburg, Russia, come in and stage a work for us, and we just work on the dance and the technique. Mm-hmm. And then in rehearsal and even sometimes on stage, the comedy starts creeping in. Now, don't forget, the dancers are all funny guys. You know, the reason why they want to be in Ballet Trocadero, among other reasons, is that they are the class clowns of the dance world.
Good.
So it's a very free-spirited group, and so the comedy comes out naturally. Of course, we have our stock jokes, you know, the music hall jokes, vaudeville jokes, and we look at the old comedy TV shows, Gracie Allen, George Burns,
sure.
You know, the show of shows. You know, we talk about use of the eyes and the different kinds of expression, which are very important for comedy, which is not really taught in the ballet world anymore. I mean, the ballet world has changed a lot. So that's why we become very, very popular with not only people who are interested in dance, but people who are not interested in dance, because they can see both good dancing and good comedy.
That's what I've seen. The costuming and the makeup is impeccable, but that's kind of where it stops. There is chest hair. There are male armpits. You know, I was just thinking, too, that among all the eyelashes and the makeup and the fancy hairdos, given the popularity of beards, a beard would be kind of striking.
I don't necessarily talk to the dancers about their body hair because,
okay.
To me, that's personal grooming. But I have drawn the red line, as we say these days, to facial hair and also tattoos.
Ah, okay.
Can't show a tattoo on stage, and you can't show a facial hair.
Yeah, I just thought that would be, you know, you're taking it right to the limit.
People have asked about that, and I guess I'm conservative in my old age.
Well, you put the art in artistic director. Good for you. Another thing I saw, and people will see when they come to see them, men come in more assorted vertical sizes. It's kind of that up and down skyline of a chorus line that adds to the visual humor.
You know, when you have a classical ballet company, it is a classic art. And it does have standards of what, quote unquote, is expected, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they want people of the same size. So you might have a dance company that has very short ballerinas, for instance, or you might have another dance company that has very tall ballerinas, but not too many dance companies can afford to have both tall and short. So everything sort of has to be in the middle. If you're doing Swan Lake, for instance, you know, you want the dancers to be sort of in the same size range. You know, we're a comedy ballet company, and
right.
We don't need to worry about that, and we don't. We come in all shapes and sizes, ethnic backgrounds and nationalities, and we celebrate the diversity.
It's just so much fun to watch, and you have a couple of skyscrapers in there, as you said. You have all different. So
yes.
Have famous ballet stars come to see the show and commented on it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, early on, Baryshnikov had come. Makarova had actually helped with the staging of Les Sylphides and Alina Ternyshova. She staged our Giselle.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
Especially in London, you know, all the Royal Ballet ballerinas come, stars from American Ballet Theater. James Whiteside has come. Misty Copeland, you know, they all have come to see the show because we are now a well-established comedy ballet troupe. People are finding that our work is worth seeing.
Well, I urge people to go online and do what I did. Spend a whole heck of a lot of time in front of your computer or your smartphone or your iPad and watch these gentlemen do their thing. Trocadero.org is the website. That's T-R-O-C-K-A-D-E-R-O. Tori, I hope after this brief preview, folks can't wait to see this very popular and, I have to say, in this day and age, very necessary form of entertainment designed to provide a perspective that is both fun and healthy.
Before we go, I want to give a special shout out to Brenna St. George Jones, director there at the theater, who has booked us in, and we want to thank her a lot. This is the inaugural season of the theater, I think.
It is.
And we're very happy to be part of it. A big thank you to Brenna.
We shout out to her all the time, especially when we need interviews. She does a wonderful job, and I think you guys will be impressed with the new Pablo Center. It's pretty stunning. Tori, thanks so much for being with us on WPR. We look very much forward to seeing you.
Thank you very much. Take good care.
What fun and what talent. Wow. Next Tuesday evening, the 16th, Pablo Center, Eau Claire. PabloCenter.org is the website for tickets. You know, hearing after the fact from someone else how good a show was is such a wasted opportunity. So catch it all while you can. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. A Spectrum memo for you. Watch tomorrow, Friday, for big show announcements from Clearwater Comedy. Check out their Facebook page. Clear and water are separate words, by the way. If you make them one word, and you'll end up in Clearwater, Florida. And with our beautiful weather, who wants to think about Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Support for WPR comes from the Earth Arts Spring Art Tour, the Upper St. Croix Valley, May 3rd through the 5th, featuring artwork at studios, galleries, and arts organizations. Tour guide and map available at earthartswi.org. For 52 years, the Eau Claire Jazz Festival has been gaining a reputation as a showcase for some of the best music, most homegrown, but also special guests. In the end, the festival is all about young people, where aspiring musicians rub elbows with not only peers, but pros who once sat where they sit, dreaming about tomorrow. A special guest of this year's festival is one who isn't too chronologically removed from early ambition, and ambition is something she continues to radiate in big doses. Her name is Grace Kelly. She plays the alto saxophone, kind of like this. She plays it literally wherever and whenever she can. A social media sensation, she plays concerts and collaborations all over the world, along with steady gigs like Attachment to John Baptiste and Stay Human, the house band on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. We found Grace at home in New York just long enough to have a conversation.
I'm home in New York City after a long travel day yesterday from Memphis. 14 plus hours. Huh. Thunderstorm. Happy to be home.
I'll bet. Well, you know, it's usually a natural to ask about musical roots and the beginning of music passion in one's life. I know your musicality began at an early age, but tell us about music in Grace's growing up household. What was that like?
Well, I was really blessed to grow up in a household that very much appreciates the arts. So from a young age of 5 years old, my parents took me to Broadway shows in New York with my sister, and they were playing great music around the house. Classical, Broadway, pop, a little bit of jazz, mainly the saxophonist Stan Getz and Brazilian music by Jobim and Astrid Gilberto.
Oh, and, love that stuff.
Yeah, me too. So that's really where I first heard the sound that Stan gets and fell in love with the saxophone and kind of planted it in my head that one day I'd love to play the sax. But meanwhile, I was studying classical piano from the age of six, figured out very quickly that I wanted to write my own songs and write my own notes. And so from the age of seven, I wrote my first song, knowing three chords on the piano, just singing some random words. And that's really where the music bug hit me. At the time, I was also very lucky to have an amazing music teacher in my public school. He's a jazz pianist, still is. He used to take the time after class to work with me and, you know, help me learn new songs, perform in front of the school, and really saw that I had musical talent. He eventually, when I did start saxophone, was the one who linked me up to my first private saxophone teacher and just believed in me. He played on my first album when I was 12 as well. He's the pianist on it. Yeah, and he's the one who actually told me that I should record it because he had heard my music, he heard my songs. So, you know, I've been incredibly blessed in my journey of music to have the most amazing mentors, teachers, support. People have really encouraged me and believed in me.
Cool.
And that's the start of it all.
So later on in your music education, where did you get book in the practice room smarts?
Well, I grew up studying at the New England Conservatory Preparatory School.
Okay.
Every Saturday, I would go all morning, afternoon, and take private lessons, theory classes, ensembles. That's really where I learned a chunk of my jazz theory in the background. And then I would say the other place I really learned was the stage. I was incredibly lucky to start performing professionally from the age of 12. That's when I made my first record. I was invited to play my first international performance at the age of 13 in Tromsø, Norway.
Oh.
Then started, you know, the Newport Jazz Festival when I was 18. And then in between that, I studied at the Berklee College of Music and was touring and making albums.
See, I was just going to begin to ask now about your busyness. It's not surprising that you are as busy and love to be as busy as you are because you were busy back then.
Yeah, I feel grateful every day to get to do what I love and to be able to do it professionally and make a living and be able to spread that joy to my incredible fans and simultaneously get to travel all around the world and meet new friends. It's a true blessing and to be busy and doing a lot of different projects. I think what I love the most is I never know what's around the corner. And I really, you know, as much as I plan things and I'm preparing on a regular basis, it constantly amazes me. The things that might come up, whether it's making an appearance in the Amazon TV show Bosch, Michael Connelly reaching out to me personally and asking me to be in it, or writing his music for his latest podcast, or the Manhattan Transfer covering one of my songs in their new record. I mean, it's like things that I couldn't possibly ever plan. Or, you know, playing in The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and that band. I feel very lucky for those opportunities that come.
Well, now that we've established what the whirling dervish grace is like, and I've caught you at a moment that's unlike that, what is the quiet grace like? What do you do when you're not spinning around?
Well, I've been trying to discover that lately because, to be honest, it's been a lot of spinning around on stage, but when I'm home, I have people ask, you know, what do musicians do when they're home? You know, do you rest? I wish. I run all my social media. I read all my email blasts, all the digital campaign. I do all my emails advancing for gigs. It's actually busier at home than when I'm on the road. When I'm on the road, it is like a break because I'm basically like, you know what? I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go to soundcheck. I'm going to perform. I'm going to go to bed and do the same thing tomorrow. When I'm home, it's like, oh, I got to record 5 videos today, edit them all, post them, do all my social media, send out an email blast, answer all these people about an email, do this, do that. You know, that's the way that I feel independent artists in today's world, they need to keep a tab and continue pushing and developing their brand and updating fans about what's going on a consistent basis. When I do have, when I carve out the quiet time, I'm a big fan of meditation and yoga, and I really try to keep myself healthy so that I can stay on point.
Well, you did use the word bed, so let's make it official. You do sleep, though, yes?
I do sleep. Oh, okay. My gosh. I do love my sleep. That's
okay.
For sure.
Just making sure.
I will not compromise on that. I got to get my 8 hours plus.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah.
That's not usually the story you hear from musicians.
Oh, no. It's true. I'm a stickler for sleep.
On the phone with Grace Kelly, jazz artist, saxophonist, singer, songwriter, coming to Wisconsin, the Eau Claire Jazz Festival, the big one, been around a long time, headline concerts Friday and Saturday, April 26th and 27th. So, Grace, you dance and you move a lot when you play. That is impressive, but I watched a video on which you were climbing Lombard Street in San Francisco.
And you were
playing while you walked. How do you do all that stuff? You must be in shape. Is there a science to playing the horn, inhaling, exhaling, like you're working out?
I grew up dancing. That part of me comes out very authentically. And it's been fun to get back into my roots recently and see if I can, you know, integrate it when I play. Because I always love to move when I'm playing. It helps me express what I'm going through in my mind. Now the walking and climbing thing, well, it was one take. I don't know if I could have done it more takes than that. I have to say I was more impressed with the cameraman in front of me. He was walking backwards.
I thought of that.
And there was people coming down, you know. So I'm like, I'm playing the horn, I'm walking, but I'm also trying to give him eye signals. He was very aware of what was happening behind him, but I get nervous, about people tripping or myself tripping. But, you know, I do keep up with endurance workouts just to keep the lungs breathing and kind of be able to have that endurance during performances. That's really helpful.
I have been on Lombard Street, and I was marveling at it. I tried to imagine what it would be like to play the sax as I went up it, and I quickly got that out of my mind.
There was a lot of adrenaline pumping because doing something like a live pop-up like that, I get the energy from people walking by.
Sure.
And it's really fun.
Yeah. You know, jazz is one of those things in which there is respect for old school and new ways of doing things. There's a line in your bio that I got a kick out of that reads, as a millennial shaking up the jazz world, Kelly is picking up steam by rewriting the rules. And I thought, wow, using the word millennial and steam in the same description. That's quite the dichotomy there. But let's go back to the old school thing. Old school is, to smart jazz people, I think, important because in your world, in that jazz world, the music world, one should respect what has gone before and the people who paved the roads you're on. Am I right there?
Oh, 100%. I mean, these are the fathers and mothers that have built this beautiful thing called jazz and the tradition and the language, and that's what all of us millennial folks are trying to just celebrate the legacy of and continue to push forward.
Good. I also saw you on a video utter the following quote, "Music is my everything, my joy, my love, my light, my passion, and I truly believe it's what I was put on this earth to do." Now, you're coming to a jazz festival that for over 50 years, I know, has added to that kind of inspiration for young musicians. What's it like to see yourself in kids?
Well, one of my favorite things to do is to lead workshops for young musicians, and I have a lot of memories that come through in those moments of being their age and having incredible musical experiences with my mentors. And, you know, when I have these young saxophonists who come to this workshop and they come up to me and they're like, hey, you know, I'm working on this, I'm working on that, how can I get better at this? I learned your song on that and you're an inspiration. You know, it touches my heart because I feel their passion so deeply and it comes through, and it's really exciting for me to see these cats who are like 10 years younger than me playing and living this music and have so much enthusiasm for it. And I try to spread knowledge that I've learned along the way, but mainly it's a really exciting time to sit down with them and to learn from them about what they're checking out, and then to just hopefully give them a little insight on the way I do things and open up their eyes to maybe another way they could approach the saxophone improvisation. I also like to give them thoughts and knowledge about, you know, marketing yourself in today's world and what it means to be a professional musician and the tools that I feel are important for young people today to develop in order to be a full-time artist.
Well, it's obvious you have the talent, but I have gleaned from our conversation that you do have a wisdom that is sort of beyond your years. So congratulations on that, too. Grace Kelly, thanks for being a perfect Wisconsin Public Radio guest. We will continue watching your career.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Cool. Go back to whatever it is you're doing. Take a nap.
That sounds good. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. See you soon. Bye.
She loves to do all those pop-up videos. She'll pop up almost anywhere, so go online, gracekellymusic.com. Look up her YouTube channel. I guarantee you'll find her. Concert tickets online at eauclairejazz.com/tickets or at pablocenter.org, Friday and Saturday evening, April 26th and 27th. And coming up next week, you're going to meet Darman Meter and Lauren Kinnon of New York Voices, another Jazz Fest headline sensation. You might want to do some homework and give their sensational singing a listen beforehand. That's a neat perspective. NewYorkVoices.com is where they are. I want to remind you that Friday evening, the Flambeau Valley Arts Association welcomes Brian Wickland and the Barley Jacks, Ladysmith High School Auditorium. Friday night at the Big River Theater in Alma, it's Barbaro, new album, Great Quartet. Thanks, Erica, Dean, and Kate. Thanks for making our audience special, you guys out there. Keep in touch via Facebook and email whenever the spirit moves you. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Grace Kelly takes us home. See you next week.